Hello and welcome to GFW Radio. This is the podcast for July 30th, 2008. I'm here with the mostly regular crew. We got Chuff. Is that what we're calling you now?
That's what Sean calls me.
So is that what we all call you?
That's your nickname. That's what you told us you are.
Well, that's what that's my avatar in MMOs.
Your dad was asking you what Chuff Money was this
weekend. True. My dad did call me and ask me what Chuff Money meant.
Because he had been listening?
I have no idea why he asked me that.
Uh-oh.
I figured it out. Anthony was saying that. He's like, yeah, his buddy is in the base, must listen. And I was like, no, dude, is that the name on your email account or something? And he confirmed it was.
Ah.
Like, think about it, man. Occam's razor. Cutting that shit.
What's funny to me is people like speculating all these weird things that Chuff means when it's just...
Apparently it does mean some weird shit, though, in the UK, which doesn't surprise me that that's why it would end up in the Games Workshop, like, dwarven language thing. That I'm sure they just took, like, some UK slang since it's written by UK people.
Right.
And threw it in there. I don't know. I'm okay with it either way, whatever it means. So.
We also got Sean and Ryan here.
Hi.
Hi, Ryan. And I'll get this out of the way quick. We talked about dollar store opening in front of your house last week
right.
on the podcast.
Right.
So someone sent us in a clip from a paper. Unfortunately, it doesn't have the entire story, but the following paragraph is contained in the scan. Deborah Jackson said she likes shopping at the Dollar Palace because it's convenient and casual. I don't have to get all dressed up like I'm going to Walmart or something, she said.
Wow. Yeah.
That sums it up.
I just want to know.
I'm telling you, the property value of my house must have gone down like $100,000 since that fucking dollar store opened. It's just,
come
I don't
on,
know.
Dude.
I no offense,
because people can shop there in flip flops.
Yeah, no offense to the
unlike
customer
Walmart.
Base that's getting there, but I'm telling you, man, it's like all of a sudden I'm like living in Skid Row. The place coming in and out of that store, and the people who work there too.
I'm just trying to picture what the uniform for a dollar store is when, like Walmart, it's like, you know, slacks.
It's a floral shame tarp.
I've been there twice now. Both times I'm waiting in line behind like one guy with one can of soda, you know, for like 10 minutes. How long could this transaction be taking?
So, you've been in there twice already though.
Yeah, I'm not going back. That's it for me in the dollar store. So that's it for this week. Sean, you haven't been playing games because your fan broke.
Yeah, let's get that out of the way.
Yeah.
Like we're scrambling last minute to try to get some game-related topics because I've been out of commission with a broken CPU fan. And we went to Best Buy with Anthony, and they didn't have it. They didn't have any fans.
CPU fans, no.
And then I found out as we were shopping that CompUSA is out of business.
You
I was
didn't
like,
know that?
God, I got to go on the internet. Yeah, but the good thing that came out of it was I picked up the first season of The Wire.
DVDs. Oh, excellent.
And I thought that was pretty weak.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. I have this thing where if something is popular and it's proven successful, I'm determined to hate it. So I went into it determined to hate it, and I hate it. It's just.
I actually just try to like what you like. So even though I've loved all, what was it, six seasons? Now I don't like it. Now
right.
You said you don't.
Well, that's cool. That allows us to continue to have our working relationship.
Right. Yeah, it was kind of overrated.
Now, we could talk about it later in the podcast, but I actually think it's incredible, as everyone else does. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, the cool thing is you're
trying to buy all the other seasons.
I don't want to overhype it, but you're very much tip of the iceberg.
That's what everyone says.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We'll come back to that after we talk about the game stuff, because, of course, that's the number one thing on my mind all week is The Wire.
The Wire.
Yeah.
What we need is a Wire.
You were playing some...
Yeah, you played games.
I did, but like most of the games I played, I can't talk about because of, you know, embargoes and whatever.
It's
ethics.
One of those weeks, you know. Like,
yeah, because Warhammer Online, I would love to talk about that. Can't.
Yep.
Grimm, I played episode one. Maybe I could sort of talk about that.
Lich King, you're saving for Legendary Thread, just as like I just got done doing a big discussion about Soul Calibur for the one-up show.
Basically, let's just pimp every other podcast
that we're doing.
Podcast.
This is basically what this is going to be this week.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about Grimm, then.
Well, what can I say and not say? I don't know. The game comes out on the 31st on GameTap. I think it's exclusive for GameTap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're going to be releasing weekly episodes. And if they are all as long as this one, then I definitely recommend you just wait a few weeks because this thing was maybe half an hour. At the most.
Right. Well, if you're already subscribed to GameTap, though, the way that works, it's like you're not paying for that. You're already a member for some flat fee, and that's just something else you now have access to.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, duh.
Oh, is it a free download, then? for Game Tap?
It's not free. It's right. if you whatever their rates are nowadays.
And it's like $8 a month or something.
Yeah, so you'll get everything in their library plus.
I see.
Access to that game.
They have TV commercials now.
They had for some time now.
In the middle of games?
Well, it's like as you click download and the game's downloading before you play, it'll like hit you.
I was just kidding.
You mean on television? Awesome? It's advertised on television.
Oh, maybe I don't watch enough TV. I just remember I've been seeing a lot of Street Fighter II Champion Edition commercials lately.
Huh.
That's a weird one.
You just gave me a good advertising idea that I'm going to pitch to the game companies. Commercials in the middle of games.
That's not a good idea.
So, like, you're playing Half-Life Episode 3, and you're running through a level, and all of a sudden it, like, cuts to a commercial. Like, you stop playing, and you got to wait, like, two
It just works that way, like, in Quake
commercial.
Live. Actually, that is something I have been playing. I can mention that after Grim. Yeah, but, like, say you're playing Quake Live, and all of a sudden you're about, you know, it's first to 50 frags, and you're on, like, frag 48, and all of a sudden it's like...
right. Feeling hungry? Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Oh God,
I'm gonna work on that. That when I finally leave this dump, that's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna.
You
start
know, the saddest thing the feeling hungry brought about is I was talking with Rory about how in the hot cases in grocery stores, everything is the same color, right? And I've known this forever, but
like
it was funny to see that BBC World News did a story on it, and. So, yeah, everything in the case is the same. It doesn't matter if it's a Mojo potato or an egg roll or a chicken leg or, like, fried mac and cheese. Everything is is doo-doo brown. And there's this new thing where they put a Hot Pocket in there in a colorful foil wrapper, and they actually sell that. We were, like, searching for pictures of these cases, and we found the internal memo, like, telling, you know, grocery store managers, like, you want these Hot Pockets in here because it adds color to your case. But, of course, if you pull the pocket out, it's the same... same color as the thing, but it's like put tinfoil in here for.
So why is everything brown?
Because they all fry it in the same grease.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Now back to Grim.
Okay, okay. Well, you know,
it really works together because Grim is about covering the world in shit, and those cases are.
It's weird. They don't actually come out and say that. Really, that he's like shitting everywhere.
Well, I don't.
It's like
that.
A dark cloud. That's following Grim around.
Yeah.
You could interpret it that, because when he's standing still, when you're not moving the cursor, then he's peeing.
So it's like a point-and-click adventure? I really don't know much.
No, it's not.
It's more along the lines...
It's more like Psychonauts or something?
No. Think more along the lines
think way lower
really
brow.
Rudimentary, like Katamari, where you're in this world, and you need to cover the whole thing. It's colorful and vibrant. You need to turn the whole thing black.
It's kind of like a lawnmower sim. Really, you're just Grim, and you're just moving your cursor around, just trying to cover everything in black. And once you do that, to a certain, you know, there's different levels of, you know, it starts out, you start out at zero with the world clean and pretty, and then there's like notches, so it's like stinky, smelly, vile, whatever. And so he'll, like, that's the only challenge, is like, okay, now you got to go from stinky to vile.
Just as in Katamari, where you collect enough items, then you're able to roll over increasingly larger items. In this, you become more powerful, and you're able to convert things that you previously couldn't convert. Turn them crappy, you know?
This is.
I didn't notice that, to be honest. I didn't notice that I got more powerful. I just noticed it being the same thing over and over.
Maybe in that first episode, it doesn't work that way, but later on, yeah, you have to. I mean, you'd notice because it's impossible to complete a level without...
Okay. Well, that's why I'm a little reluctant to talk about it, just because this first episode, I can't tell, I was telling Ryan this before we started, how I would review one episode, because if this one episode is indicative of what the entire game is going to be across multiple episodes, I'm not going to have a very positive opinion of it. But if this is just sort of like an intro and the gameplay is going to go from here into other things... then maybe I can see it.
This
just
is exactly
one, so.
My reaction when I played it at GDC.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was kind of like looking for reassurance and asking, like, okay, you're just introducing the basic principles here, and then you're going to iterate on these, and they're going to become substantially more complicated. Except the problem is that with an episodic game, you have to assume that any number of your people in your audience are experiencing episode whatever for the first time in the game. So you always have to have the equivalent of, like, the training wheels in every episode. So it's never really going to get that much more complicated. There are some like platforming elements, some pretty rudimentary platforming elements. But in what I saw of American McGee jumping around the whole game, it's pretty much what you're looking at now.
Yeah, that's not so hot. Why? I mean, and the other problem, of course, is that every episode, I assume, is going to be sort of self-contained because they're different fairy tales, right? It's not like this is a continuing story, I would think. I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen episode 2, 3, or 4, but this one was the, what was it called? The boy who needed to know what fear was. I forget the exact title. But the next one has nothing to do with that. It's another grim fairy tale. So how would it even continue? I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Well, you could put them together in some, you can have some like framing narrative that says Grimm is going across all these stories, you know, the people in each fairy tale don't communicate with one another, but Grimm's able to visit them.
You're right. That could, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what you thought. The graphics are kind of funny and neat. They've got this kind of, like fractured fairy tale sort of goofy, sort of mock primitive look, but they're actually semi-sophisticated.
It reminded me of some of those, I forget the artist, but of children's books where it's cut out, it's montages, but made with like scrap paper and stuff.
Yeah.
And colorful. I think the game looks fantastic. And
it
that was
kind
of my concern is that it was basically a showpiece.
Yes.
I mean, they've got this art style down and it's also fun to see the transformation, you know, these characters and stuff. And then you see them, they don't just get covered in black, but their world actually changes physically. So a windmill will suddenly be like a flying, you know, spinning guillotine or something.
There's some good
cutting people
LOL
up
moments.
Flying.
Right. You go past a children's playground and there's, you know, kids on a, what's it called? You know, like one of those, parallel
monkey
bar things, and then when you go over it with black, then the kids are like literally hanging, like, you know, by their neck, and it made me laugh as I went through all those things, but it's feels a bit one joke,
right? Imagine like if you had a book for kids and it was like you have a page that shows a fairy tale and then there's a panel and you pull it out and you see this transformation. But what if that book was like 1,000 pages long?
Yeah, and that's all there was, and yeah, every page was the same one after another. That is how it feels. The dialogue and the voice acting is also very funny. Mm-hmm. You know, so they do a good job of kind of telling this sort of irreverent thing. It really reminded me of Fractured Fairy Tales. I don't know. Is this a reference? You guys even know what I'm talking about?
I think so.
Am I too old for that?
No.
Is that like Garbage Pail Kids?
Fractured Fairy Tales was like on
Bullwinkle.
Right. It was part of Bullwinkle, where they tell like goofy versions of popular fairy tales. That's kind of what this is.
Yeah.
Like all the way around. And that whole part of it, the whole story is very fun, but the gameplay, I don't know. We're just going to have to see on future episodes.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you on that. Played a little Quake Live, and it's pretty much as advertised. It's Quake 3. It plays in your browser, but better looking in some ways because they're able to do things with the textures, and it, like, if you go to full screen, it automatically scans, like, your computer and will adjust to the highest setting that you can handle. So it looks nice. It plays as well as Quake 3 Arena is always played.
Is this a beta?
Yes.
Okay.
The only problem isn't the game itself so much as me, you know, rather than really experimenting with the matchmaking and stuff or having, you know, none of the people in our playgroup have access yet. So it was just me. I popped into a server and it was like, oh, here's the dude who's been playing since this game came out. Not Quake Live, but Quake 3. And it's like impossible. You can't even kill these people.
Oh, so it's just like regular Quake
3. And I thought I was really good at Quake 3. Like, well, I mean, subjectively, really good among people that aren't like truly good, you know? And yeah, it was like the first server I ended up in was just populated with those people. And this is the deal with this game. It's like, I believe that so many people would love to play it and could get a handle for it and enjoy it. But if you're used to being empowered in Halo and stuff, and all of a sudden you turn this on, you're like, hey, this is free. It's fun. Let's try this out.
Man, that sucks.
It's not even like Halo where you throw a grenade and you're going to get a kill and you'll be like, okay, that's cool. Like, you will not get a single point.
They should have a vetting process for this, you know, for the Quake, for this version. If you've ever played Quake before, you're out.
Yeah.
Like, this is only for noobs.
Well, they can have, yeah, I mean, this is based on...
That's
I'm
not
sure
fair. Why are these guys coming into this one now, too? Shit.
But they should want to segregate themselves because it's only fun for them to play against people that are competitive, too, right? I would say so, yes. If there's one or two people that were, like, my equivalent in your game and you had a bunch of people that were competitive, then it's fun because it's, like, this is the wild card. This is how, like, say if I'm behind the leaderboard by, like, 4 frags, like, you know where the spawn points are. You, like, just pick up the remainder on him. Mm-hmm. But if everyone in the game was that way, it would be, like, unless you just wanted to practice, like, trick jumps and rail gunning and stuff, you know?
We run the same thing with Company Heroes all the time. The only fun games we ever really have are the ones where it's, like, it gets really hairy and we think we might actually lose.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, it's always about finding the right competition. And so I can't critique that, though, because I don't know. Like I said, I haven't really messed with the matchmaking.
Yeah, I was going to say, can you make your own server?
So you can. You can lock it for just your friends. Like I could say, hey, us four, I'm gonna make a game. Come on in and we could do it. Yeah. But I'm excited for it, though, because, I mean, it shows you, I mean, the potential for these, like, browser-based games is pretty huge. And it's when it's out of the closed beta, and all it ever is a matter of, like, pasting a URL into an AIM or event window or something. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I got a little bit of grief on my blog because I did my top 10 PC games of E3 earlier this week, and I put RuneScape HD on there. And the reason I put it on there was not because I think RuneScape is such an amazing game, but the fact that if you've seen the HD version, it's looking pretty good for what is a browser-based game. I mean, again, this is a full-on MMO that now has 3D graphics that are, you know, at least as good as EverQuest. I mean, right. Yes, I know EverQuest is old now, but still, it's free.
But in the fact that it runs in a browser,
and runs in a browser,
amazing.
Right. It's like you're saying, I could give you the URL, and then you could be playing this free MMO forever, you know?
I'm okay with free browser games like that, or even like instant action when we were playing Tribes. I was surprised at how well that ran and looked.
Fallen Legion's Empire.
Sorry. It is like Tribes, though. Yeah. Yeah.
I think there's a huge potential for that. And the fact that, like, I mean, when we were in Best Buy, when you go to the checkout line, it's like either side is like all the what is it? What do they call those purchases?
All the
impulse buy shit on either side is all video games now, and it's crap.
Is it really?
It's like for PS2 and Xbox and Wii,
like,
and you're like,
Wii, yeah.
There's like a huge market for people that aren't like, they're looking for value over all these other things. And it's like, you can't beat the value of totally free, you know?
So what are some of the games in this like impulse thing? Are they any good
it's
ones?
It'll be like
2-for-1 shitty PSP games, like shrink wrap together, like that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, like stuff, what was this one? Primal. I reviewed that on PS2 way back when that came out. There's going to be some fans of that game that are going to be saying it's not shitty, but I didn't think it was the best.
I guess some parents must just be like, yeah, throw this in the cart for my fucking kid.
So they leave me alone so I can watch TV tonight.
Yeah, it's like the new, you know, you're in the grocery store when I was a kid, they wouldn't have toys aisles, but they would have like by the cereal, there'd be like this little pig. It would have like an army man and a car in it. Like that's the new equivalent, like 2DS
games.
Here
you go, Sean. Now shut up.
Yeah. Don't choke on it.
That's kind of sad.
Kids will ask for them, too. I would ask for those. I knew damn well I didn't want them, except to burn them.
I do think that these, I mean, this is no major insight, but I do think these free games are just going to increasingly dominate the PC space, you know? I mean, I think, you know, watching what EA's doing with Battlefield Heroes, and, I mean, my question's going to be, like, how any of them, I don't know, like, what do you think? Let me turn it into a question. Do you think Battlefield Heroes is actually going to work and succeed?
I imagine so. I wish they'd given me access to the beta going on right now. A lot of people are playing that, but I really don't see why not.
I mean, I don't know how much money initially they have to make back. Like, I can't imagine. I'm trying to
think. Well, of course, it'll be easier for EA to support that than a startup, right?
If they say that they have, if they put out a beta and there's like 200,000 people sign up just for that beta, then they can go to advertisers and say like, look, at any given, like in any day, we have this many different eyes like on this space. And then that number expands through word of mouth. I mean, that's the thing. As long as you keep the content coming in, the game's good enough to keep people playing over prolonged periods, then you just show those figures to advertisers and they don't say no. You know?
Not to mention, are they doing microtransactions for that? Like, buy a guy they, an
they
eye
will.
Patch
that's,
or something.
I mean, that's whole part of the thing about, you know, clearly they're one. Well, they're not wondering, but they're hedging their bets how to recover their costs on it. And so it's like, well, we can advertise a little, we can sell some things, and I figure they're probably not counting on any one, but the combination of all these different ways of bringing in income, or how they're going to, like, you know, profit from these.
What I learned when I talked to Nexon a while ago, and maybe I brought it up on this podcast before, I always bring up everything 20 times, was just how small the percentage has to be of microtransactions amongst the player base for them to turn a profit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the amazing thing.
Yeah.
When Nexon came in and showed Kart Rider for the first time, and they said something like, you know, we've got like, whatever, 5%. Player base buying things, I was like, oh shit, I'm sorry. And they were like, no, that's like huge
yeah.
in this thing.
How many players How many people play that game? Is it in the millions?
A lot.
Many. Yeah,
I don't know.
So, speaking of free games, I'm just wondering if you guys know, because I forget. Like, I remember reading something, but I'm not sure really. Like, what happened to Mythos after Flagship closed? Is that still going to occur? Because, man, I liked that when we played it.
You should have been playing it all along, and you would have the answer to that question if you liked it that much.
I liked it when we were playing it, but we all moved on, you know? The thing was, it was only a beta.
I don't know. It's ongoing.
Yeah, my current understanding is there's a limbo thing going on here with that.
That sucks.
Didn't Hellgate get snapped up by someone?
I think.
Well, Hellgate and Mythos both were taken over. We need the details of the story before we can talk about it on the podcast. But Flagship lost it. You know, we've actually contacted Flagship to get a story about it, which is going to happen at some point. So it's a big mess. Let's leave it at that for now.
We also, on the same free games tip, we just Nexon brought in Combat Arms again yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
How was that?
I talked about it before. I played it. It's kind of like, it's a decent FPS, somewhere between like a Counter-Strike and Call of Duty, but somewhere in between, sort of, you know, the speed and the way that the game functions. But of course, it's not really competitive with either one of those if you were to put them on the shelf and ask the same price for them all. Mm-hmm. But for a game that you can just jump in for free and kind of have fun with, I definitely recommend that people try it. I don't know if it's the kind of thing where they're going to want to keep playing, which is obviously what they need you to do. But the interesting thing, too, that came out was when they were saying that in Korea now, it's free FPSs that are the number one games, which is, you know, we know how popular the RPGs are already there. So to hear that, I mean, that kind of also explains why you see id and DICE and stuff now working that same angle.
Mm-hmm. Especially with Korea, where it just seems like everyone there plays a crazy amount of PC games in particular. Yeah.
Those guys were pretty cool too. We were kind of like giving them shit. We were just pretty much being honest. I was telling them flat out, because I was like, you know, about five of us in our gaming group had played the game and we had mixed reactions. And, you know, there's things that we make fun of. And like one of them, you know, that the audio things when you press, and we were reminded yesterday, another one is like, you are so respectable. And you say these things as you're fighting. And so we kept saying that, you know, as they were showing us the game, we were like, you know, you should charge for these. Like, don't get rid of these. Like, these are what give this game identity. Like, you just, like, maybe add an animation or something and, like, give us some new hot quotes.
And they were throwing out ideas, too. They were like, we should let our user base vote on what other ones will be that you can say to each other.
Yeah.
Wait, is that like a diss?
No, that's like a high five move. You can also say like, what
you are so respectful.
There's a WTH button and it says like,
I don't know if it's a diss. Maybe it is. It's hard to say. You just can say it whatever you want.
Or you are the hero.
And the other one is like, I forget the one about crazy.
Oh, what the heck are you doing?
Yeah.
But
there we go. You know, I sent this out. You guys, it doesn't sound like you had time to check it over, but I wanted to bring it up to see where we stand on it.
Yes, sir.
Steven Totillo at MTV Multiplayer just put up a little mini interview with Todd Howard at Bethesda working on Fallout 3. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of talking about, you know, in this game, you can play the good guy or you can play the bad guy like so many other, you know, games. But it's kind of like the Han Solo middle ground that's like less explored. Well, we talked about it when we were talking about when Sean Malloy and I were talking about Bioshock back when, is that you can save, you could harvest the little sisters, you know, or you could save them, and that the game outside of there's one exception, and that's if you harvest the first one and then save all the rest, you'll still get the good ending. Mm-hmm. But there's no, you know, there's no middle ground where, you know, like the way I played, I harvest six and then have a change of heart and start saving the rest, you know.
Right.
So I'm curious if in your knowledge, are there any games that have really explored that, or at least, you know, taken that into account, where there's something other than you're playing the bad guy or you're playing the good guy. And there's kind of a difference too between someone who's kind of going back and forth, you know. Like, I mean, the whole thing with Han Solo is supposed to be like, you know, mercenary, you know. Mm-hmm. you're sometimes behaving one way and sometimes another, or like Wired character, like characters in The Wire, as opposed to just someone who's kind of like, I'm just going through it and I don't know. Option B is always the best answer to the questions.
Well, don't you think that, I mean, it seems to me like the BioWare games kind of always let you do that to some extent.
But in the end, they always have an ending that's like ultra good or ultra bad.
Well, are you talking about just in terms of how it affects the ending?
because I can, like, I just...
Well, those are two things. I think they're both worth addressing, right? So you're saying that the BioWare's games allow you to occupy the space in the middle.
Right. Well, I just played...
But do they react to that along the way as well? Because those games aren't just about the ending. They're also about...
Right. And they will react. I mean, in Mass Effect, for example, there were certainly times where I would... I mean, for the most part, I always play, especially the first time, I'll play a game as good. You know, I'll be the good guy and help everybody. But there were a couple missions where I just felt like, oh, fuck this. I don't want to do it. So I would always take, like, the last answer on the dialogue tree, which is basically, like, you know, the go fuck yourself answer. And then if you do that, in Mass Effect, at least, that would either open up or close up a particular plot point. So it was definitely affecting the game. I mean, so what I'm saying is, like, I was mostly a good guy, but there were some times when I was being the arrogant ass, and the game was changing because I did that.
Right.
Like, I couldn't solve another quest in the easiest possible way because I had been a dick to these other people.
Right.
So
it's telling, though, that when you started off, you say you begin these games and you go into them assuming I'm going to be this or that and I'm going to be good.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, I'm just going to go in and be myself and whatever happens. I'm going to react to each decision and judge it on its own merits, and whatever happens, happens. Like, you know,
right.
Like, again, like, I keep bringing up the wire because that's my lens for the week. It's like, am I going to take the money this time or am I going to leave it? You know, like, what if I take the money next week, you know?
Well, I definitely was, especially in Mass Effect, more where I felt a little looser than I did for whatever reason than in say, the D&D games, that I felt I was judging it based on, like, what am I going to get out of this?
Right.
You know? So to some extent, it was like that. But I actually don't know how it ultimately affected the ending. I don't know if there was a Fallout-type situation where there were multitudes of things that could happen depending on what you did throughout the game.
Right.
I don't know.
I'm really racking my brain, and I can't come up with, like, a single game where I think about someone that you kind of play like that. Like, I think maybe in some way, like, the only game that comes to mind is, like, StarCraft, when you're playing as, like, the Jim Raynor character. He's kind of like that. And the fact that he's, like, kind of doing what's good, but he also, like, will straight up just kill a random colony of people, like,
right,
to do what he thinks is right.
Of course, you're not making any decisions there, right?
True.
That's just a game.
You're watching.
Just guiding. Yeah, that's the thing.
You're watching a movie.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I mean, I think maybe the new Fable will...
Yeah, I was going to mention that. I didn't play the first one.
Was Todd Howard claiming that that's what Fallout 3 is going to do? Sort of put you in that position of...
No, he was saying that, like, yes, I mean, as you play, the game is going to be able to accommodate you if you're sort of, you know, vacillating between these you know, poles. Mm-hmm. But in the big scheme of things, though, he was saying, like, I don't know. I think the final question, you know, he was kind of like, well, it's not quite that.
Uh-huh.
I don't...
Well,
Fallout
1 and 2 are good examples of that, where, you know, throughout those games, you could opt to help or be a jerk or be indifferent or whatever. And, you know, like I said, and has been discussed many times before, that is a game where, in the end, the mass accumulations of your actions would play out in how the ending went.
Right.
And a lot of it was just told in voiceover. You know, this thing happened because you did this or didn't do this.
I think I've been playing the wrong kind of games, because it's pretty rare that, like, not the wrong kind of games, but, I mean, it's pretty rare in the games that I've traditionally played where this is even a real issue.
Right.
Like Oblivion and stuff. But I was like, it seems like even better, though, because on the face of it, I'm like, those kind of decisions would probably be even more meaningful in, like, Call of Duty 4 or something than a lot of these other spaces.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it'd be difficult to implement because clearly the decisions in that game are whether you shoot or whether you don't shoot, but they could still work, you know?
Well, if you don't shoot, then you're dead.
It depends. There could be situations. I mean, a lot of it's just ethics, right, that they don't want to get into.
Right.
There could clearly be a situation when there's a mission in the game and it's like, here's this car coming at you in a checkpoint, and there's no civilians in the game, so it's not even a question. But in some other imaginary game, you know, it's like, do you shoot or do you not shoot?
That'd be fantastic.
Are these people freaking out? Or, like, or even things like Real War, right? You say your allies capture some people, some enemies surrender. Do you shoot them?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you, you know?
I got to say, in the Lich King beta, well, I'm sure we'll talk about this in the next podcast. And are you in yet, Ryan?
Yeah.
So have you done the Death Knight stuff?
I have not checked out the Death Knight.
Okay, so you can create a Death Knight, which is a new character class in World of Warcraft, and you need to have a level 70 character to make one, but when you make one, you start at level 55. And Blizzard has come up with this entire kind of opening suite of quests that you have to do to kind of train you how to use this character, because it's unlike anything else that's ever been in the game. And but in terms of its well, the character's, the Death Knight isn't evil. You know, he's not just like bad, like in the Horde, like, you know, a bad, quote unquote, bad orc who's basically just another character. Yeah, he's a Knight of Death, Sean.
He's one of the four horsemen.
Yeah. He's actually evil. And the storyline, these early quests that you do are probably like the most disturbing things I've ever seen in any Blizzard game, because they'll actually, you know, one of the quests is actually to go around and kill a bunch of civilians. You know, so these are like unarmed, you know, cowering people who, you know, as you come up to them and hit on them, they'll start saying, you know, but I have a wife and kid, you know. And I think in the past they've like shied away from that thing.
It's a double standard, dude. If Running with Scissors did that,
I'd be complaining instead of saying it's great. Yeah. So I haven't honestly finished the Death Knight quest suite, because I believe they have to make it so you're back into the game proper at the end of it. I believe somehow you have a turn of whatever sort, and then you're just sort of like bad in quotes as opposed to actually evil.
Yeah.
You end up fighting the Scourge, which is who you're with when you're killing civilians. But I do have to say that even though I did the quest, because you have no choice, because that's how you level up at that point, and that's how you advance to the next quest, it was kind of not disturbing, like I was up late at night crying or anything. Well, maybe a little. But, you know, but a little, you know, a little more, I don't know, just it was like a step I didn't actually think Blizzard would take. So I thought it was kind of cool that you have to do that. You know,
you're wicked.
Yeah.
Did you read the quest dialogue?
Sure.
Oh.
Why?
I never read that. I would have missed it. I would have just been like, I need to kill 10 of these. Gonna go do it.
See, you're part of the problem, Ryan.
I am.
Just in society in general.
Dang.
You need to take the time to stop and read what these people wrote. Somebody got paid a lot to do that.
There is an instant quest text option in the interface menu for a reason.
I know. And they didn't want to put it in.
Well,
when they made the game, they added
it
later.
I have instant quest text, but I still read it. A lot of times I just have it appear all at once instead of having to read it as it appears.
I made myself not turn that thing on so that I would read the text.
Huh.
So for people that that don't have a beta invite, they can't obtain them.
Oh yeah, what do you got there?
Through eBay. I just saw randomly on some post on the internet that they're selling, the people that went to the French Blizzard thing, they're selling those BlizzCon beta Wrath of the Lich King passes. And the most expensive one I saw was like for $1,000, but that one also came with the Tyrael pet as well. So it was like,
good grief.
Now, all but these are from the BlizzCon cards from last year.
Are they?
Right. This argument is from a 2007.
Oh, okay,
BlizzCon
okay.
But that's okay. That entitles you to the beta.
Right. That's,
in fact,
that's
if
the thing.
If they went to the Paris thing and got that card, doesn't
it entitles
isn't that
you to a beta?
Up?
It entitles you, yeah.
Because that puts you on the European server, I think.
Not only, but that one, the reason people are paying more for it is because it comes with a Murloc costume. So, but like these ones are like, buy it now, $339. And the description's pretty red because it says, right off the bat, it says, eBay, stop banning this. It isn't for software. It's WTF.
Buy with confidence.
Yeah. Yeah.
This guy has 100% feedback, positive feedback. So, and he liked that he emphasized that it's free shipping, when he also says that...
Yeah, there's like a sticker on there.
He's like, I will scratch the card and email you the code, and only you the code. It is unused. Like, that's all it's for.
And it's just free shipping.
And the auction right beneath that, though, is like true WoW auction house style. This guy was $339. This guy's buying now $335. He's like undercutting that guy by like a silver, basically. So. Yeah, see? Murloc code and a Wrath of the Lich King code.
Wow.
We need to... Like...
I'm telling you, it's not worth it. If you're listening and you think that you want the WoW beta that bad...
Yeah,
you don't.
It's
you
funny.
Do
well,
you
it's,
just don't.
It's
as
funny
good as the game might be.
I mean, if
$400.
Both of
that's
yeah,
way
well,
too much
both
money.
Of these say the experience is closed on August 1st, so buy now because you're losing time.
Oh my God!
What really?
That's in 2 days.
Oh wow!
Fucking a couple days.
Wait, is that true? That can't be true.
He probably means September 1st. I bet.
Yeah, that can't.
Either
be.
Way,
like,
a month.
But like either way, yeah, you're paying like $400 for a month on
either way.
Are your character is your character progress from the beta going to carry over?
No, hell no.
Right, you're
going
to lose your progress. Plus, it's a beta. I mean, there's a ton of shit that's broken. I mean, I haven't been able to log in, you know, for most. most of the past 24 hours.
That's like the fucking FBI. It's entrapment, dude. They're trying to like get freaks.
You don't want to do this.
Trying to pick up freaks.
Listen to me. You don't. If you're listening and you're just hesitating,
just wait
on the mouse button. Just wait for the damn game to come out. Play regular WoW.
In the future, I think we should do like a swag resale watch where we like, you know, when we go to these press events, we know what they're giving out for free, and then we look at eBay. We start running eBay searches and see. You know, the people that work at these at the PR for these places have to be doing them.
Dude, we should we should go check on eBay.
We can investigate. We find like a power seller. Turns out it's like some like freelance or something. Over the years, he's made like $10,000 selling ass pads, ass seats for the Microsoft press conference.
Yeah, you know what? I used to work at it was my first job at Ziff, actually, back when this company was bigger and had money. They had a computer book division, so they make computer books, and that's what I did way before you guys like were born. And I didn't know, like, the whole time that I worked there that, like, the other editors were, like, taking these books. And you guys have seen computer books, right? They're these big fucking fat, like, 600-page things, and they cost, like, $40. Everybody else there was taking these books and going straight to the bookstores around the Bay Area and selling them for credit. And I had no idea that anybody else was doing that. I saw one guy, like I didn't work there anymore, and I like went to his house, and he had like a stack of the books, and he was going to take them, and I'm like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "What do you mean? Like, this is what we all did."
He's trying to get EB bucks.
Yeah, and he was actually smart because he was taking them to a store that had that was weird.
Mike is shitting out.
Yeah, he took them to a store that sold books and CDs, so he was trading computer books for music.
Yeah,
which just sucked. I mean, I was like, "God damn!" You know, I didn't take advantage. So anyway, I'm bringing that up because now I'm going to start doing that here. Let's start selling shit. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that if you like look over our like policies of when you get hired.
Oh, you think that's not allowed?
I'm just saying.
There are certain reasons for that.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe.
Do you think like the shirts and shit we get every day would sell if we put them up on eBay?
I'd hope not.
You like know that, what? Every now and then we have the giveaways.
Yeah.
We should just start doing sidewalk sales outside the office.
I do. I have a drawer full of stuff that I've stored to give away to people on the boards.
Uh-huh.
I need to remind Tina. It's like, we always need some kind of contest, you know?
But do you think if we sold it?
If we did a sidewalk sale outside the office.
People would buy it?
And we just put like $2 on that
How about like that dwarf shirt that I got? What is that shirt? Remember that shirt that's sitting on my desk
the
now?
Bling gnome.
Yeah. The bling gnome. That's what it is.
And you got the plastic bling gnome toy.
Right. And what does the slogan runners say? It says, I'm something with my gnomies or something.
Yeah, I'm rolling
like
with my gnomies.
With my gnomies. You think someone would buy that shirt?
Is that a WoW shirt?
No, it's not a WoW
Dungeon
shirt.
Runners. Dungeon would
Runners.
You wear it?
Oh, God.
I bet you some. I mean, I guarantee you, at any event we go to, one of our users would.
Ryan looked inside his shirt.
What shirt
Wait,
am I
wearing it?
What shirt am I wearing?
What are you wearing?
No, it's not a video game shirt. It's a shirt that has a zombie on it with a computer, and it says, we'll fix computer for brains.
I got my Mass Effect shirt on.
Bro, we need to start selling. Because these shirts that we get are usually so large,
yeah,
we could start selling them at xlliving.com, which is a site that we found recently. And it's basically a number of, they just have items for what it says, extra large living. So some of these items could, you know, include, it's basically a toilet paper wand. So when you need to wipe and you can't reach, you can use the wand. They have like a toenail clipper attached to like a 3-foot rod and with the spring thing.
You're not kidding.
No, I'm serious. These are all products on the site. It was pretty amazing. It was like a look into another world seeing this stuff. You know, there's like these slings so that when you want to get yourself in bed or something, you put under your foot and then you raise your legs up and then adjust them. And then
this is like all the humans in WALL-E.
It is. And they had like the clothing, and they had this like one. It was like, it's basically a hospital gown with floral print, and it was 10XL. And we called that a floral shame tarp. But they also sell coat hangers. So the coat hangers can hold 100 pounds. So I was thinking, like, I don't, what article of clothing, I mean, you've got to have like a cop sale hanging in your closet to get to 100 pounds, no matter how much material we're talking about, man. But yeah, that site's, it's an interesting thing to look at, especially there's like a recall page, and they list the items they recalled, and they had like this sturdy hammock. And basically, if you read the product description, it's more or less constructed with like the cables that hold up the Golden Gate Bridge. It's somehow fucking broke. We were saying, like, there's like product recommendations. It's like, dude, if that thing didn't work for you, there's only two options. Like, you convince Yoda to force lift you into bed, or like you find like your own like Greek Titan, like Atlas or something.
Now we know we probably have some heavy set listeners, and it's not you we're making fun of.
What are I know? Maybe. Like, I feel bad about that because I did have someone PM me. Who's, you know, one of our heavier set. Look at the sudden change. I'm all talking about Golden Gate cables. I'm like, one of our heavier listeners. But I did feel bad.
Because
like, as
this
soon
hammock,
as you personalize,
though.
I'm like, yeah, I'm not trying to hurt anyone's feelings. Like, I have nothing against you. And he's like, I don't hate you. I don't dislike you or anything. But it's like, in principle, I don't know, man. I mean, maybe it's just childish, but it's funny, like, to me on some level when I think of, like, that someone has to use like a 5-foot rod to cut their toenails.
Well, as long as they aren't using like those scissors we saw on there that have like the spring so that you don't even have to put any effort into actually using scissors.
Yeah. That's kind of the stuff worth laughing on the site because the descriptions too, it's saying like, it's like save unnecessary, like don't waste energy unnecessarily. And it's like scissors that basically cut.
Yeah.
For
so
themselves.
See, that sounds right out of Wally.
Probably the worst product in there, there are these like plastic posts that you put in if you're on an airline flight. You put them in the seat so that the person in front of you can't recline. It like
what?
Blocks their chair from reclining, and it's like talking all about like, you know, stop these people from taking your room and stuff. And it's like, well, like if they paid for a seat and they want to like sleep or something, like, God, imagine you're flying like Tokyo or something and like you just
want to
lay back.
You don't want
them
to put the seat back because you're too fat
because
you
don't have
space.
Wow.
So some of those products there, right? That was definitely...
Yeah, I think the product's like, what is it? It's like a rod so that you can reach your toenails. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Well, it's toenail clippers on the end of like a mechanism on an extending arm with a handle. And it's about
See, that shouldn't
feet.
Just be telling you something when you need to buy that.
Well, any
Instead
of that
of buying
stuff
that,
should. They have
just,
like
get on the treadmill.
They have things like if you don't want to get up to go to the bathroom because it takes so much work. They have like 5 products just to help you get out of bed. And there's like these things to put your socks on and then like... a shoehorn attached to a 4-foot rod. I swear, you need a golf bag to carry this shit around because everything's got a rod attached to it.
But you can't carry a golf bag.
But they've got like a thing that you put up. They have a male and a female version. And if you don't want to get up to go to the bathroom, you just you put it down in the zone and kind of let it rip.
Which makes me sad. I mean, I'm sure there's like the mic's folks with
out.
Medical conditions that I know. Is that my mic crapping out?
I actually
out?
Think
no?
it's fine.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, so most of the shirts we get actually fall into that category. I actually find that amusing. The smallest gaming shirt you ever see is a large. They just like know their demographic.
I saw an XL women's shirt one time that almost fit like a normal, like one of us. And I don't mean normal. I just mean a average sized person.
Well, it's kind of, I think it just in general, like Tina, remember we got these new track jackets for the staff? And Tina, our new community manager, ordered like an extra small or something, and it still looked like she's wearing like a fucking pillowcase or something.
Mm-hmm. Let's hope she doesn't listen to that.
She's small, but yeah.
Tina barely breaks 100 pounds, man. She makes Ryan look Patina. Like a giant.
She does.
Patina, that's a good nickname.
Yeah. What size 1-up track jacket did you get, Ryan?
Small,
I think.
Small, does it fit?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you wear
I can't talk
do you
shit.
Wear it
I
home?
Have to get an extra large.
I don't.
Do you wear it at all?
I did once or twice.
Well, it's all white with like powder blue stripes on it. Something about it. Like, Jeff, how did you feel?
I didn't feel comfortable in it, no.
When I saw it.
How did you talk when you were wearing it?
Oh, I think I did this voice. I think it was that.
I remember we were all sitting
Sean,
in the...
we really need to try to get more clicks on the website. We really need more page views.
That's what I was doing. Yeah.
I remember I saw Ryan wearing it in the conference room, and I just remember thinking, like, if I was in L.A. and I saw Ryan on a bus wearing that, I would just want to fucking rob Ryan as soon as I saw some tiny white dude wearing that fucking thing with powder blue stripes. I'd just be like, you know that fool's got money.
Coming back from the golf course.
Yeah.
So we got any other game stuff before we hit the wire? Before
Ryan?
We tap in?
You guys should hit the wire, though.
Oh, we got like 7
well, let's
minutes.
Let's give Ryan his chance. What have you been playing, Ryan?
Just Wrath of the Lich King beta, some Soul Calibur, same as you.
Yeah. Any Soul Calibur comments you want to have?
It's pretty good.
Is
I
it,
haven't
is
tried.
It the best Soul
Are
Calibur?
You still playing with the analog stick, though, man?
Yeah.
Okay. More power to you.
Yeah, I don't understand, like, what's so weird about that, though. It works better for 3D.
If it works, dude, if it works, then it works. That's the end of the story. But it just seems weird to a lot of people, I think, is because so many inputs have to do with like a double tap or in a specific direction or something. And it's like you want to know. So if you're trying to do diagonally down forward and B or something, you want to make sure you're doing diagonally down forward, not like 1 degree on the analog rotation that's going to put you into like straight forward or down or something. So I think it's for those reasons. But if it works for you and it gives you no problems, then that's nothing wrong with it.
Anthony was raising his hand. It was like the most polite member of the podcast.
I'm just saying I don't know. I don't know anything about fighting games.
Yeah.
I don't either.
Everyone plays. The interface is always a challenge with fighting games. You know, like you know how I play. Like I'll use, instead of my thumb for the buttons,
I'll use
all the fingers on my hand. And that's why I don't like to play on the PS3 version, is because the right analog stick gets in the way of my pointer finger.
Right.
And I do it that way because so many of the inputs in Soul Calibur have to do with like pressing A and kick at the same time, or A and B at the same time, or B and K. And it's like, that way I can constantly do all of those, you know.
Map those are the shoulder buttons.
Right. And I just never got used to that. And there's different reasons. So people will be like, well, if you like doing that, well, why don't you just use an arcade stick? But it's like, I don't like the stick on the arcade stick. I like the D-pad. And so, yeah, I mean, we've all got...
It's like for 2D fighting games, I prefer arcade sticks. But for 3D, I do the analog pad.
Yeah. It does work for you in one sense, in that you're always in the middle of an 8-way run.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the evasive technique in the game. It's just moving 3 dimensions around the stage. You are always, like, you're never moving forward or back. You're always, like, moving.
That's conscious, though.
Yeah.
And sometimes it gets me into trouble, but I'm the kind of person in Soul Calibur. I'll sidestep you and throw you as long as you'll let me.
But I figured out. But that's that's where I got to give you advice, dude. As soon as you figure out, you don't have any ability to change up. I mean, I'm just saying, that, remember when we were playing last, you were doing that, and I figured it out, and I was like, okay. So I would just duck and, like, poke you. And right. There's nothing you could do about it because it would catch you in your 8-way run.
I also tend to be bad at catching low attacks.
Yeah, that everyone is. That's why the game's, like, based on... I mean, like, so many, you know, 3D fighting games is having a good range of, like, a good mix between low, mid, and high attacks so that you're, you know, you obviously don't want to just consistently attack in the same height level because it'll be easier to block and punish and stuff.
Yeah. But Soul Calibur 4, I think it's... quite a bit better than 3. I thought 3 was kind of...
I thought you hated 3, though.
I don't hate 3. I just didn't think it was a very much of a step up from 2. It just didn't look as good. I didn't think there were some technical issues.
I can't wait to take it home tonight and play.
And I haven't tried online yet. Yeah, I'm excited to try that.
Yeah, you're going to tell everyone your gamer tag so that they can throw down against your low-tech shittiness?
No.
Ryan is going to 8-way run and he's going to try to throw you. So it's just duck. Yeah, that's how I thwart you. All I got to do is duck, dude. And you just keep whipping throws and then I just stand up and throw you.
That did happen, yes.
Many times.
Maybe.
Again and again and again. You figured out then. You're just like, you just want to hit me with the low attack.
You should check out the My Cheats.
I mean, a mid attack.
The My Cheats Soul Calibur guide.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I heard it was good.
Yeah, there's some excellent stuff on there.
Yeah. I read all those character profiles.
Yeah, edited some of those. That's the thing. It's kind of like the one unnecessary part is like there's a column that tells you about the story. And the story is always like Ivy did walk into the evil basement. You know, I mean,
we changed some of those up.
I don't understand that. Any sense. I don't understand.
I had our cheats editor. He wrote most of them, and he kind of pointed out how stupid some of them
were. Well, yeah, it's not the writer's fault on our end.
He didn't make it up. Right? It's not his lore.
Yeah, it's just some dumb... He pasted me something on AIM for one of the characters, like a bio that came directly from Namco, and it was exactly the kind of thing that... It's like this is incomprehensible and
sorry.
Reads like some kind of fanfic.
Okay, since I don't play these games... These character bios, is there a story in the game? Or is this like random shit?
In each game, well, there's like a winner story? Or something, right?
There's not. It's like they try, but it doesn't matter. You just press the button. Same as you're talking about quests in an MMO.
Right.
You just press the
button.
You're
just clicking A until the game starts, right?
Yeah, they try to loosely imply that something happened, that you fought for some reason, and that there was some result to you beating the last boss.
And yet, we did character bios every single day for like 3 weeks while I was on vacation.
Yeah, but there's also
we took that seriously, one
of the columns, though. The others were useful, and those were like the character strengths and weaknesses. And now when you go to the site, you're able to find all sorts of things.
Like
breakdowns
info.
Of like,
okay.
Yeah.
So we weren't like, tomorrow, Ivy story,
yeah.
Like it was some big
but
deal.
But the stories were in there, though. And that was just the thing, like, that's part of the deal. I mean, you're supposed to associate your character, but I think it's like you identify more with your character because you know they got a badass uppercut or a ground throw.
Is there Soul Calibur fanfic then?
I'm sure you could go to like DeviantArt and find some horrible like slash like fiction with pictures.
These characters were tailored to appeal to the people that write fanfic.
Well, and more so, they're tailored for because they're kind of blank slates, and they're also tailored for people who cosplay. And if you look at the
which are the same people.
Yeah, if you look at the costumes in Soul Calibur 4, I would argue that a great many of them were deliberately designed in sort of response to the kinds of costumes that cosplayers have been making and stuff.
This is the game with all the gigantic boobs, right?
Yeah. One of them, yeah.
We get the time limit. Here's the, like...
Oh, yeah.
My take on The Wire in the 5 minutes. Just why, like, right. if you were in the boat that I was in prior to last weekend and you hear about it and you're not certain. As you were saying, realism's, like, pretty incredible. There is only, you know, one significant thing that I had trouble suspending my disbelief on, and that's when... the homicide and drug detectives are constantly going to rooftops inside the low rises to monitor people. Mm-hmm. But the way that it's established, everyone that lives in those communities is like hypersensitive to the presence of anything suspicious or out of the ordinary.
Right.
You start screaming 5-0 anytime something's like slightly off. And yet episode after episode, these guys are charging in the buildings and hanging out on the roof next door. Not once did anyone in the community say like, dude, that's, you know, the guy that arrested you in the past 5 episodes. He's going on the roof again. But outside of that, it's phenomenal in that, like, you're like, the other deterrent is like, okay, it's another cop drama or something.
Right,
know?
Sure.
And it is, it portrays, each season tackles something different, I understand.
Yes.
In the first one, it's a drug sales community in Baltimore. And the other side of the story is the homicide and drug detectives as they're working out. But it's very much into, I mean, it does really nice things in establishing parallels between the two sides of these stories.
Mm-hmm.
So if a character on one end starts to try to run a side business or something, a drug dealer, Orlando, well, he's not a dealer, but at this point he's like, hey, I'm going to try to run a side racket.
Mm-hmm.
They'll have that story and how that will play out. And at the same time, people on the law enforcement side will be busted for trying to take their investigation in a way that their superiors didn't intend or aren't interested in taking it, you know. Mm-hmm. You see parallels between, you know, how these individuals operate within larger organizations,
mm-hmm.
how you have to basically, you know, give yourself up for what's supposed to be the greater good, but at the same time, everyone's, you know, trying to manipulate it to their interests. And then this is the other big theme is games and gamesmanship, right? I mean,
yes.
It's called the drug trade, of course, it's called the game, but the game's working even on not just the cops versus the drug dealers in the sense, but within the game has a way of operating on the cop side, you know, when you're trying to go for promotion, when you're trying to, you know, work that way. Same thing when you're trying to go from being a pawn to the kingpin on the drug side. What happens if you're not technically in the game? Is it a game, really? I mean, other people are brought into it all. But it handles everything so well. The characterization is phenomenal. All the performances are first rate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it'll be my short version of it, but it's like as soon as like I watched 2 episodes, I was like, okay, I'm watching all these, and then I started eBay searching for the next season. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's that good.
Yeah, and it really, I mean, yeah, it does keep getting better, and the kind of parallels that you're seeing now and the, you know, that they keep going and they get deeper and deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And David Simon, the creator, pulls the camera back a little more each season. So, you know,
you get an even bigger picture.
Right. I mean, the characters you're seeing now, it does change every season, but the core characters are there.
Yeah.
But you see now how they fit into the bigger picture.
It's like an expansion pack for an RTS. At first, it starts off, there's 2 armies, and then they add 2 more armies.
Yeah.
And then they add more.
Yeah.
It's funny, though. It's got a lot of good. I mean, they do.
That's sad because it makes sense.
Even when stuff's like fairly, like, you'd be like, okay, if gaming and the game is one of your, you know, significant themes.
Yeah.
And metaphors for the story, like, okay, if you have people standing in a city square where the concrete's arranged in almost a chessboard-like pattern, you think that's pretty obvious or something, or heavy-handed, but they'll do it in just the right way. It's like they're not going to find this town square where it's, like, so obvious, but they'll find one you're like, oh, that was, like, a pretty good match cut, actually, from
right.
these people playing chess to this, you know.
Right, and also, like, you don't want to scare people off. I mean, because in addition to it being, you know, this very serious Dickensian drama with all of this sort of, like, you know, you can look at a higher level of the structure and probably write a pretty great college thesis on it. It's also a really good crime drama. There's also a mystery involved in every season. So
the mics are jacked.
Yeah, the mics are horrible. So at least on our end, so sorry.
Instead of, instead of, like, saying, you know, we're going to start this episode and we're going to solve this crime and you know, the next 60 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever, they'll give you the full season in order. Yeah. It's basically a single case that expands.
Exactly.
And branches
you should definitely
out different
watch
avenues.
A show. Even if you think you're not going to like it, you should just watch it.
We got candy. We'll have to address it next time. For Steve Moss sent us a bag of stuff from Taiwan. Some interesting candy. A lot of dried and salted plums in there.
In a Walmart bag, I might add.
And Aaron Simmer, the head writer of Armchair Empire, also hooked me up with a bag of Canadian treats, which was much appreciated.
Thanks, Aaron.
And we out.